I'm Catherine Arndt, the Chief of the VLGA Connect Studio. Welcome to today's episode, brought to you by the VLGA, your councillor support network and the national broadcaster on all things local government.
Hello everyone, welcome back to VLGA Connect. It's about time, I think, that we have another in our local leaders series, a very popular feature from VLGA Connect that talks to mayors and CEOs at VLGA member councils all across the state. And with us today, I'm delighted to have the Mayor of Kingston City Council, Councillor Jenna Davey-Burns. Jenna, welcome.
Thank you, Chris. I'm thrilled to be here. I was just mentioning how much I love listening to your podcasts.
Oh, thank you so much. And I think I've heard you described as a self-confessed VLGA Connect nerd or something.
That is very true. I will own up to that. But some great ideas. And I didn't mention to you before, actually, once I was listening and I heard a great story coming out of the City of Vincent about their green track. And I said, hey, Siri, send a message and remind me to follow up on that. And so I had a briefing just the other week of an idea that came out of VLGA Connect.
Excellent. Oh, that's great to hear. Thank you for being a listener and a supporter. But we're here to talk about you today, Jenna, and what we like to do on Local Leaders is find out a bit more about the person behind the title. So, Mayor of Kingston, first term councillor, am I right in saying?
Yes.
What prompted you to put your hand up to be part of local government in the first place back in 2020?
Thanks for that, Chris. Well, I shared part of my journey when I was elected mayor last year in November, and it was just such a privilege to have this opportunity. We're in the southeast here on Bunurong land, so I was just like to acknowledge country whenever I'm speaking. This is an important part of my journey as a leader.
Yeah.
One of the things that really, I guess, crystallised as a moment in time, and I can pinpoint it right back in September of 2019, where I really realised the impact that local government has on people's lives. I was on the phone as a resident to Kingston staff, and I was a foster carer who just had three children come to me in a full-time capacity very unexpectedly. And I was desperate for help. I was working full-time in Family Safety Victoria doing some family violence reform work, and the kids needed school placements, they needed after-school care and kinder placements. And so I was on the phone to the staff and really quite distressed because I'd really been having a hard week that week. And I just remember Kim, her voice on the end of the phone, just so reassuring. And she let me know she got it and that she was going to help. And that was the moment really, I think, that I recognised the importance of local government. And I think from that moment on, I thought a lot about the impact that local government can have on people's lives. I was part of the Pathways to Politics program in 2019 at the same time. And so it really crystallised in that moment why running for local government would be something that would be so important to me, to be able to put in practice those values and to be part of something that actually really positively impacts on people's lives.
That is a lovely reminder of how important local government is and can be to people. Clearly, because you were part of Pathways to Politics at that time, you must have obviously had thoughts of some involvement at the political level prior to that experience with your local council.
It started really early for me, Chris. Actually, in my early 20s, I was studying political science at Melbourne Uni and thought a lot about going into politics. I spent 3 months interning in the US House of Representatives. I was very lucky to be one of 12 Australian students who got that chance every year. That was an experience. We need a whole hour to digest that, and I do love
politics. Let's do it. We'll have to book a return. I'd love to hear more about that. That must have been an
incredible program. Yeah. I came back, though, and thought locally about politics and felt really it was very combative and it wasn't for me. I thought what I want to do is community work. So I started volunteering. I went into working in the Victorian government. I was working with bushfire survivors. I worked at the Victorian Multicultural Commission. I spent some time working in the sector at an Aboriginal Women's Legal Service, working with victims, survivors of family violence. And through those roles, that was where I hoped to really make impact in things that matter to me. So social justice is really, I guess, if you wanted to sum it up, what drives me. I came back around to thinking perhaps I need to be one of the decision makers in the room around 2019 when I was doing Pathways. I'd done the work at a local sort of community level as a volunteer. I was doing the state government policy work, but I wanted to be in that driver's seat where the decisions get made. And that's where I decided I would put up my hand to run for local government so that I could be one of those people in the room helping to decide what happens in the municipality. So that was kind of, how it all circled right back to where I started.
Yeah. Clearly, you're someone who doesn't mind taking on extra responsibility. So you're doing that program, you're foster caring, and I do want to ask you more about that. You put your hand up for council and you've been elected at first go. What do you put that down to being up? Because many people try numerous times to get elected, don't they, without success the first, second, third times even.
I mean, I think one of the things that I'm really passionate about is women's role in all levels of government, actually. And you'll see that my trajectory in local government has been a lot about supporting other women, being part of the Gender Equality Advisory Committee. So I do think that there is part of what I represent, and that is that women want to see their issues and matters represented by local councillors. I think that's a big part of it. I think when I was running during lockdown, it was quite tricky. We weren't able to go out to community forums. So I was running actually podcasts online where I was interviewing other local candidate nominees, local government nominees, and chatting to them about why they were running. And I think that storytelling and sharing other women's experiences was a really great way for the community to get to know me. I was also out and about on my roller skates, dropping off flies in people's letterboxes. I think people were a bit bemused.
The roller skating candidate.
Yeah, roller skating candidate. So there's a bit of an element of fun there too.
Yeah.
But I think predominantly it was really about the community recognising that I understood local issues. I've been a resident in Kingston for a really long time. I'm involved in lots of different community groups and understood that things like our little shopping strips are so important. Our green open spaces are so important. You know, there's a lot of things that I was talking about when I was campaigning that I think our community saw and went, that's the person that we want up there speaking for us.
Is it those podcasts you were doing, are they still available to listen to?
They are actually, yeah. They're on Vimeo and there's a few that are on social media as well. I was very lucky I interviewed a few people, like Isabel Tolhurst, who...
Yes, there's
a few great. And Claire Harvey down in Frankston, we got to interview her and then she got up as well. So there's an incredible range of women in those podcasts. They're not as professionally done as yours, but they're certainly fun conversations.
Excellent. We'll have to seek them out. Let's talk, so many things I want to follow up on there that you've mentioned. Let's talk about the foster caring.
Yes.
Yeah, how long have you been involved in that space?
I've been a foster carer for 8 years and I think I've had over 30 children now in placements. Wow.
So what's the motivation there? What do you get out of that service?
It's a really important part of my life, and it's an important part because I think we all have a responsibility to care for children and for families who are experiencing vulnerability, challenges, or difficulties. My role as a foster carer really is to help provide a safe and welcoming space for young people when their families need some extra time to get back on track, and that's really the way I see the role of foster carers. And I think that by doing that, I'm a better community member. And that's how I fulfill that obligation, that personal drive, all those ethics that I feel to try and leave the world in a better place. That's one of the ways that I feel like I'm actually able to really contribute deeply and meaningfully. Certainly with foster care, you can see the immediate impacts of you being a foster carer. And sometimes you also get to see the longer term impacts when you hear about the impact of your mentoring through those placements, the care that you've provided. But just knowing that for those children, there's a safe space for them while they're transitioning through a pretty tough time. I'm very passionate about system reform. I actually met with Liana Buchanan just yesterday. She's the Commissioner for Children and Young People. It's very lucky to have half an hour of her time. And I really talked about the need to focus our efforts around prevention and early intervention. If we can wrap around families that we know need extra support, many children who end up in the child protection system, their parents were in the same system, and it becomes a cycle of intergenerational difficulty that is hard to break. But through foster care and being able to provide those spaces for families and early intervention around supports for parents, I really hope that we can start to break that cycle. It's a really challenging one, particularly at the moment we're hearing through the Europe Justice Commission, experiences of many Aboriginal children and families through the child protection system, and that's something that I really strongly advocate that we need change in.
Being a councillor and being mayor this year clearly gives you a platform to talk about and raise awareness of these issues, but is it hindering in any way your ability to be a foster carer? Are you still juggling that at the same time?
I am juggling, and it's a great question because I think there's a lot of people out there who are juggling caring responsibilities. I'm also really passionate in talking about why we need to provide types of support for parents, carers, anyone really who has a caring responsibility. I certainly advocated strongly to Minister Horne when I was on the Gender Equality Advisory Committee. Actually, most recently through the Local Government Mayoral Advisory Panel, I was able to talk about remuneration, particularly for councillors out in regional areas. It is really tricky being a councillor and having to manage a second job. Most of us have to do that to pay the bills. So I'd say that that's actually probably the bigger challenge. Providing caring is actually, I mean, one of the things that I love is a lot of the, when I have kids, they come to visits and community events. We had a one recently around down in the southeast talking about litter. And the kids came along and Melbourne Water were there and they had a really interactive display for kids. And so I actually got to experience my role as a councillor and mayor through the eyes of the kids that were with me. And they always pick up on something new and different. And I get to see the world through their eyes. So that's, I think, really lends itself to my role and really strengthens the way that I do my work.
Well, well done. Congratulations on your efforts in that space. That is terrific to hear about. And I can see that it gives you great pride and you get a lot out of that yourself as well.
Very lucky to work with Berry Street. They're an incredible foster care agency and give me a lot of support.
I want to talk about, before we get into some current issues, that whole pathway to politics phase and the mentoring. Mm-hmm. You were a mentee with, you'll tell us about your mentor, I hope, and then became a mentor as well to a state MP. Tell us about that experience.
Look, it's been an incredible privilege to be part of that program. Pathways to Politics is philanthropically funded through the Truella Foundation and a partnership with the University of Melbourne. It's now a nationwide program, and I think it really speaks to that need that we have in local government to ensure that there is gender equity. We don't have that in Victoria. It's something that I think we really need to see in October. I am really concerned about the number of women who I know currently sitting at the moment as councillors are saying that for a number of reasons they're not putting their hand up again, but predominantly it's because of the difficult and challenging circumstances that they face as councillors. We can talk a bit more about that because I certainly raised that with Minister Horne when we met recently, and my concerns about, I guess, some of the standards that we, I think, as a community need to take stronger charge around, and that is preventing online bullying and harassment. Because it is really distressing and women are on the receiving end of some pretty vile online trolling and abuse, and it has to stop. Pathways, though, coming back to your first, your initial point of your question there, really set me up for success. One of the things that was really helpful was Ruth McGowan came and spoke to us in one of our sessions with Pathways, and her book, Get Elected, which is actually available for free now online as a PDF. Was just speaking to an upcoming candidate in October and letting them know about how incredible that book is. Ruth was able to just provide really clear and practical ways for me to think about campaigning for local government. When I finished the Pathways program, I opted in for the mentoring program, and that's where I was paired up with Sally Capp, which was honestly just one of the most incredible experiences, but also foundational. Sally was incredibly generous with her time, and I proposed to her that not only did we have, you know, one-on-one mentoring sessions, but that actually come and shadow her for a day. And I have to say that was, I think, one of the most rewarding and enriching experiences, and getting to see her in action up close, which was very generous of her to do, just gave me such an incredible insight into how to really use the role of mayor, and was quite inspiring, actually.
Yeah.
Following that year, I then got to be a mentor to Georgie Purcell. Big shout out to GP, who's doing incredible work, just such a formidable young woman and leader. And working with her was really such a privilege as well. So I was able to share a lot of the lessons that I learned, just a lot of that pay it forward, things that Sally had shared with me that I found really helpful. I was able to then share with Georgie. And I believe that Georgie's now started mentoring as well through Pathways.
Oh, yeah.
So you can see that incredible loop of women giving back to one another.
Yes. And can you see that paying dividends this year as we get into an election cycle? Are you seeing, you talked about a lot of women not continuing because of all of those issues. What about that next generation coming through? Do you have confidence about that?
I am concerned about October. I'm concerned for lots of different reasons. There are so many barriers, particularly for women in succeeding in local government. I've been really privileged here at Kingston to have had an incredible councillor team, certainly some incredible people like Steve Stakos and Tamsin Beasley, who are long-standing councillors, who have really mentored me through my first year or two on council. I'm also really lucky to have worked in the state government previously. So I come with a range of kind of policy and governance background that I think really lends itself to the role. And I've had other women really support me in my leadership journey. When I think about young people and I think about cost of living, housing stress, thinking about how they might be managing holding down a counsellor role part-time and trying to hold down full-time work and caring responsibilities, there's lots of barriers in the way. I think we need more pathways for leadership for young people. And it's particularly for people who identify as being from communities who don't always have traditional access to power. I work in Aboriginal health outside of my role here in council. And one of the things that I think we see is that the pathways for people who identify as being from groups such as being Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, for people who identify as living with a disability, those pathways into leadership are just that much harder. And I think we need to think really carefully about how we as a sector start to play a stronger role in mentoring that next generation and making sure that those pathways are there, those opportunities are there. I sit on the board of the Queen Victoria Women's Centre, and one of the things that I advocated strongly for was to start having young people coming in and shadowing us. And we worked with Seat at the Table, which works with the Centre for Multicultural Youth. And we had a young person come in, shadow us through our board meetings. And I really think that those kind of opportunities are the ones, those hands-on learning opportunities, are the ones where young people will really get their teeth into and get that practical level of experience.
I'm gobsmacked at the amount of things that you're doing and are involved in. It's really quite incredible, Jenna. You talked about this issue of online bullying, the rise of incivility. I don't know if you've heard a podcast I did with an amazing woman in Canada called Diane Kalin-Sukra. Diane and I are collaborating on some work, which we'll be able to say more about in the weeks ahead, around this toxicity and civility that's a problem not just here, it's a big problem in Canada and the US and the UK. What do you think needs to be done to really tackle this problem in a meaningful way?
It was a great podcast, and I'm so grateful that you are shining a spotlight on this issue, because I think it speaks to a number of things. It's not just about the experience of elected representatives, but it's about a robust, functioning democracy. And to do that, we need to be in an environment where we do have good discussions about things, we have robust discussions about policy matters, but where it starts to slip into behaviour that is intolerable, where there are threats being made. I met with a counsellor last week who was speaking about their experience of threats being made against their life following, well, they were a mayor last year, and there was some protests at their council chamber. Just completely unacceptable levels of behaviour that erode our democracy. And I think that's where it really comes back to. We're going to need multi-pronged approaches. This year, I think, is the biggest year of elections globally. I think it's like 3 billion people voting in elections from local government all the way through to federal elections this year. It's really topical and very important. It's going to require a lot of different policy levers, and also community standing up and calling out bad behaviour and just saying it is not acceptable, where we see those comments online, making sure that people are aware that that is not acceptable. If you're hosting a forum, that those comments are removed. I think we need to see greater use of legislation that protects people, that we actually see enforcement of legislation that we have available here in Australia, to think about and to make sure that people who are engaging in these types of behaviour are held accountable under the law for that unlawful use of language or the threats that they're making, because it really is intolerable. And mental health is really being impacted. I know counsellors speak to me about their experiences of PTSD and ongoing anxiety, which is just completely unacceptable.
Well said, and there may be opportunities to involve you in more discussions on that issue going forward, because I do think, as you say, we need to keep the spotlight on that issue and really underscore the unacceptability of the position we currently find ourselves in, and God forbid that it was to get worse. As you say, some civic leaders getting death threats simply for trying to do their job and do the best thing for their communities. It's a very sad state of affairs. But let's not dwell on that. We'll probably have opportunities to come back to that. Let's talk about what you're doing this year as the mayor. Was it part of the plan when you first put your hand up for council to take on the mayoral role at some point?
I've always had aspirations for leadership. I'm very lucky that this councillor group saw that potential in me and have entrusted me with this role. I really do see myself as a custodian of the office of the mayor, and I think that's really important. With the one-year terms that we have in local government, that idea of everyone being able to bring something different to the role is also important. And for me, the key priority has been around social and affordable housing. As I mentioned to you earlier, I've worked across a number of sectors, and where I see the nexus of all of those issues that I really care about, such as ending homelessness, health and well-being, preventing family violence, and ensuring that everyone leads a healthy, flourishing life. It's housing that it really comes back to. So when the CEO and I first met, the day after I was elected as mayor, he said, "What will be the thing that you really want to prioritise this year?" And I said, "Thinking about how Kingston can influence social and affordable housing." That's something that I just think, I know there's a lot of families out there experiencing mortgage stress and a lot of young people who just simply can't afford to buy a house or to even live near the services that are so important for them. We've got a lot of key workers in Kingston actually who've let us know that they're having to move outside of Kingston because it is becoming unattainable to purchase a home for them here, whether that's an apartment, a townhouse or a standalone home. And I think that's something that's really important for local governments to think about how we support our key workers, our nurses, our childcare workers, our tradies, people serving in police and firefighting. Those are critical functional roles for cities. We need to make sure that we have a diversity of housing available for everyone to yes. make their municipality home.
I must admit, I do try to use the Local Government News Roundup podcast to highlight some of the things councils yes. are doing, and Kingston is one of them. Just on the day we record this, one of your initiatives has got a run, but also out in Corangamite Shire, where they're giving key workers, particularly the inside access, I guess, the priority access as land gets released. Do you think local government as a whole is thinking outside the box enough to really make a difference, particularly on the housing issue?
Well, I think I've seen some really great initiatives, particularly around sustainability. That's another issue that's affecting housing. Mornington Peninsula and Gippsland and a few other shires recently hosted a coastal roundtable a few weeks ago. That was an exceptional opportunity for coastal councils around Victoria to come together and talk about issues that are impacting us as coastal line communities and to think about how we need to think about housing differently and to think about severe storm impacts, to think about sea level rise. So I do really see that the sector has the capacity, the knowledge, and the ability to innovate. I think what it comes down to is for us to continue strengthening our relationships with state government. And we're very lucky to have the wonderful Minister Kilkenny as part of Kingston. Actually, we've got some really incredible MPs in Kingston, so I'll just do a shout out to all of them and say hello. We've got two federal members of cabinet, which is very exciting. But look, we have that opportunity through our work on Plan Victoria with the state government to really provide local knowledge and expertise, because at this level of government, we experience or get the feedback from residents that is so vital and so critical to the development of state government policy. So I think the relationship with the state government is really important. We've been working very closely on the suburban rail loop, which is a big project and one I know that there's been some concerns around at Kingston. We're really focusing on how this will be a city shaping project. We've got two areas, Clayton and Cheltenham Hyatt, that are going to be sort of the starting points of the suburban rail loop, and really thinking about the way that we can influence decision making and outcomes on those projects. Around housing, around green open spaces, around community amenity. They're top priorities for me. And I think I've got 6.5 months left as mayor, so I've got to make it count.
yes, indeed. And of course, I imagine it helps to be appointed to the minister's advisory panel of mayors across the state. How are you hoping to use that platform to influence, thinking and awareness in government circles?
It's certainly a great privilege, and I'm the representative for the Association of Bayside Municipalities. We had our first meeting just a few weeks ago. There was lots of consensus in the room about some of the issues facing both regional, rural and metropolitan councils, particularly around things like gender equity. Actually, it was a really strong one that came through. Rate capping environment, really the challenges that our sector are facing through that. We had a great and good discussion with the minister on the day, but one of the things that I did was I just sent the minister a letter the other day with a bit of a roundup of some of the other key issues that we didn't have time to discuss. And my plan is going forward to be able to use that opportunity to really continue highlighting some of those issues that I'm hearing, not just from Kingston, not just through the Association of Bayside Municipalities, but through all the connections that I've formed. And I do just want to say it's been incredible becoming a councillor and becoming part of that broader councillor family. I love going to our forums and summits, not just because of the topics, but because of the relationships that I've formed with other councillors. They sustain me and inspire me. There's some incredible, particularly women in local government, and those meetups just leave me with goosebumps and feeling ready to kind of jump back in on the next issue. So certainly hoping to be able to use that role to advocate for some of the broader needs in our sector.
That's fabulous. And I think as a sector, we're very privileged to have someone as passionate about these issues as you sitting around that table, because we know, I can tell just from talking to you today, that you'll be doing your best to make sure those issues are front and centre and that there's an increased understanding of their importance.
I think the probably memorable moment was when I did tell Minister Horne that I thought planning policy was really thrilling. And she was very interested to hear me say that.
Was she?
Yeah.
It's not something you hear said very often, is it? So in terms of your future aspirations and plans, as you said, you've got 6.5 months left of your mayoral term, which obviously is your current focus. What about beyond that? What are you thinking might occur?
Look, I love Kingston, and this community has just been incredible to serve over the last 3.5 years. I would really love the opportunity to continue doing that. I've thought a lot about running again in October, and it's a wholehearted hand on my heart, yes, with lots of enthusiasm, because I really care deeply about Kingston, and I've become even prouder since becoming a councillor and a mayor. Honestly, look, we had the Prime Minister down recently. We were launching Hawthorne. They're building an incredible facility out at Dingley. And I did cheekily tell him that I thought Kingston was the best municipality in all of Australia. And there's lots of reasons why. One of the reasons why is because of the community. We have the most beautiful community groups here. There's a group called the Morty Dippers, and actually the woman who started that, it's all about health and wellbeing, and we don't have time to go into it, but she recently won our Kingston Women of the Year with Namita Bagardia, joint winners. And it's working with women like that, working with community groups like the Moorabbin Rams, for example. They're doing incredible things that really make me feel like I've got so much more gas in the tank to keep going. There's so much more I want to get done. I've come in with a big agenda, and there's a lot of things that I still want to tick off. A lot of things have been able to achieve in incredible outcomes, but I feel like there's so much more, and it's just kicking off with the suburban rail loop, with a lot of the projects that are happening here that the state government are driving through Kingston. We have incredible opportunities, and I really want to be part of that, making sure that my community there and their voice is part of those changes and helping to guide the way that happens across our city. So that's what my hope is for the future, but I guess I might have to get out on my roller skates again and do some letterbox drops of my flyers and see how I go.
In an environment that doesn't include lockdowns, it'd be good to see this this time
different
around.
Different experience.
Jenna, we've learned a lot about your passions, the things that you're doing, and, you know, it begs the question, how do you manage to balance all of that with a personal life, and what do you do to achieve balance and to switch off from your responsibilities?
I think when we were speaking earlier, I reminded myself that you are actually able to switch off, but it is hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard because I live in this community and I love it. So, you know, sometimes it's the pile of emails that makes you feel a bit stressed out, but then I go to community events and it reminds me why I'm doing things again, and then I feel really good. So I do think going to community events, even though it can be hard to get around to everything, that's what fills up my cup, is being able to go out and chat with people. Over Easter, there were some great events across Kingston. And last night, Hyatt Football Netball Club, which is in my little ward in Kingston, have been really welcoming to me and let me drop into training sessions when I can, when my schedule, you know, can fit it in. And I went last night and did 90 minutes of training and walked away with very sore legs, and I'm a bit unfit, but I had a great time. And it was really fun. You know, it was a lot of teamwork and a lot of strategy. And so sometimes when I'm training for netball, I think, oh, gosh, this is really interesting, actually. It's a lot like real life in the council chamber. Teamwork, strategy, talking to one another, communicating, a bit competitive but a bit fun. It sort of reminded me a lot of the chamber, actually.
So I think we've filled our brief today. We've found out quite a lot about the person behind the role, the title of Mayor at Kingston City Council, and I've actually found it quite inspirational, Jenna, and I'm sure many others would. Thank you for being so open and passionate with us about all of those issues.
Oh, thank you so much, Chris. It's wonderful to talk to you, because I really deeply value the work that you do on the podcast, the content that you cover. It's incredible. Yeah, thank you
very much. Just keep listening, keep those downloads happening, and look out for this one to hit the VLGA Connect podcast queue very soon. Jenna Davey-Burns, lovely to have you on the program, and
thank
all
you
the best.
So much. Thank you.
And that's our local leaders for today from VLGA Connect. Thank you for watching and listening. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. We've got much more coming for you very soon. Until next time, bye for now.